Hello, guys. Welcome to episode 6 of Forget the Fad podcast. I am Ian Bickle, and today I am joined by James Krieger. James is the founder of Weightology. He has a master's in nutrition, a master's in exercise science. He's a published scientist, author, and speaker. He's been involved in the fitness industry for over 20 years, wrote over 500 articles, including some brilliant ones on insulin and body fat testing. And more importantly, he is a dad of two. How are you today, James?
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
Brilliant. Thank you. So today's topic, guys, we're going to talk a little bit about metabolism, but we're going to focus a lot more on NEAT. I'll have a couple of clients who will be laughing because I'm constantly talking about NEAT and making NEAT puns. Like we all do, I'm sure. So firstly, I feel it's important that we should talk about metabolism, because we all know that person who can essentially eat what they want, and it's claimed that they must have a fast metabolism. So firstly, James, if you wouldn't mind just telling us what is the metabolism and what's it made up of?
So when we talk about metabolism, what we're talking about is our rest. Usually, I mean, at least when I think in terms of metabolism, we're talking about our resting metabolic rate. So resting metabolic rate is just the energy your body needs just to stay alive, to, you know, keep your internal organs functioning, everything like that. I mean, to measure resting metabolic rate, you have to wake up in the morning, you know, after an overnight fast, you know, no caffeine, no food, nothing like that. You go into the lab, you lie down. They put you in a, what's called a metabolic hood. And you lie there for like 30 minutes or more. And, you know, we measure your oxygen consumption and carbon dioxide production. And basically we get a measurement of your resting metabolic rate. So that's what we would consider metabolism. And, but that's just like one component of the calories you burn each day. There's also obviously the energy you expend through physical activity. And then finally, there's a third component, called the thermic effect of feeding, which is just the energy you expend digesting food. So those are the things that kind of make up your calorie burn each day. I mean, the biggest chunk does come from your metabolism, but there's other components to it as well.
Cool. What sort of percentage wise would the metabolism be made up of then?
So it depends on how active you are. So the more active you are, the lower percentage your resting metabolism makes up. So I would say in a sedentary person, maybe 75% of their daily energy expenditure comes from just metabolism. In a physically active person, that might be maybe closer to maybe 60%, you know, and, you know, a really extremely active person, it may even be down to 50%. But that's what kind of percentages you're looking at.
And the thermic effect of feeding, that's always around 8 to 10% or so,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yes.
So we are assuming these more physically active people aren't necessarily athletes. These are just people who have relatively kind of active lifestyles, which brings us into NEAT. So if you wouldn't mind just telling us what NEAT means and what is NEAT in itself.
Yeah. Yeah, so NEAT stands for non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So when we think in terms of energy expenditure, and remember I mentioned that one component of energy expenditure is physical activity, you can divide physical activity into two components. There's formal exercise. So, you know, that's planned exercise, whether I'm going to go to the gym or I'm going to go on the treadmill or go out for a run or something like that. That's formal planned exercise. That's one component of physical activity. Then the other component is basically NEAT. And pretty much that includes all of your physical activity that is not exercise. So that's everything from walking from, you know, down the stair, you know, if you have a two-story house, walking down the stairs, to moving your mouth as you talk, to fidgeting, just maintenance of posture, you know, the muscle activity needed to stay upright. All of those things are incorporated into NEAT. That's why it's called non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So pretty much all of your non-exercise activity, that's what it incorporates.
So some people kind of genetically or biologically more prone to be more NEAT than others.
Yes, so there's a lot of good evidence that shows that NEAT is at least partly biologically regulated, which means that there's a genetic component. There's a some people just are naturally more spontaneously active than others. I mean, even if you confine someone to a, you know, if you take people and confine them to a small room where they can't really move around much, you still see wide variation from one person to the next in terms of how much they spontaneously move. And again, there's evidence that's genetic. We even see it in rodents. You can actually breed rodents to be physically active or not. You can breed them so that some rodents, if you put them on a wheel, they'll start to run. And other rodents, if you put them on a wheel, they'll just sit there and they won't do anything. And you can actually breed them to be that way, which indicates there is a genetic drive there, and that it's inherited or partly inherited, and some people are just blessed genetically with just this higher drive to move around throughout the day without even thinking about it. I mean, people aren't conscious of this. It's just, you know, some people like to fidget. They're, you know, they kind of have these nervous habits. They fidget around like that, and other people don't. And it can make a difference when you start talking about totals, people's total daily energy expenditure.
So obviously, kind of modern society must have had such a massive impact in kind of in terms of like industrialization and things like that. Could you talk a little bit more about how NEAT's changed over especially recent times, really?
Yeah. So obviously, you know, with the invention of the automobile, and with all these labor-saving devices like dishwashers, things like that, all of that incorporates into a reduction in NEAT. And so, you know, our society, our modern-day society, basically is built on convenience and makes things as convenient and easy as possible. And unfortunately, it has an impact of reducing our NEAT levels. And so, you know, I have an interesting story. I didn't get to it when I was presenting on the webinar the other day. I didn't get a chance to get to this, but you know, just one perfect story to actually two stories to kind of perfectly illustrate how our environment encourages so little NEAT, and we've just become creatures of convenience. One time I was going shopping, and in the United States, I went shopping on basically what's called Black Friday, which is the day after Thanksgiving in the United States, and it's the busiest shopping day in the world, busiest shopping day in the year of the year for the United in the U.S. And I don't know what I was thinking. Normally I don't even go out that day, but so anyway, I drove to the mall. And the traffic was all backed up going into the mall. And it was like probably backed up for like 5 or 6 blocks. And it took me 20, 30 minutes just to drive 5 or 6 blocks. It was a really long time. And so originally I thought, oh, it just must be because everyone's shopping on the busy shopping day. That's why. So I pull into the parking garage, and it's like one of these, it's a parking garage that's got like 5 levels to it. And there was a sign that actually showed, you know, if there were openings on various levels. And the fact remained that there were actually plenty of parking spots on levels 4 and 5. What was happening, what was backing up the traffic is not the busy shopping day. What was backing up the traffic was people were coming into the parking garage, and rather than driving an extra 2 or 3 levels to get a parking spot, they were waiting for people to come out of the mall so they could get a parking spot as close to the mall as possible. That's how inherently lazy people have become.
Yeah.
And it was backing up the traffic. I was so pissed off that day. Because that's one of my pet peeves. I'm just like, come on, just drive up two more levels and walk. It's actually faster.
Yes.
So, it's just, but it just shows you how our society is built to, you know, I mean, we have escalators rather than stairs. I mean, even a perfect example, my other story is this. American College of Sports Medicine, which is probably the biggest exercise organization in the United States. They have an annual meeting, and I went to their annual meeting in 2001. And in the conference center, they actually had stairs and an escalator right next to the stairs. And I remember just making the observation. I was like, wow, you know, this is ACSM. These are all people who are supposed to be promoting physical activity, but I'm seeing a lot more people take the escalator rather than the stairs, seems like. And then what was interesting is on day two of the conference, suddenly someone had put up a sign that said, encourage physical activity, take the stairs, not the escalator. And then on the third day of the conference, when you got to the top of the stairs, suddenly there was a poster. You know, anyone who's been to these conferences, there's a lot of poster presentations where grad students and researchers are presenting their new data, their new research. Well, there was a poster presentation at the very top of the stairs that hadn't been there the first 2 days. And it actually, they had statistics on how many people were taking the stairs versus the escalator. So they actually had people at the top of the stairs counting over the first 2 days. And they wanted to see, number one, how many people were taking the escalator versus the stairs, and way more people were taking the escalator. Then they wanted to see, well, if we put a sign up, does it make an impact? And it did. But still, even after this, people put the sign up, still more, there's way too many people were taking the escalator. So, we just have all these labor-saving devices that's, you know, effort-saving devices that, you know, they're nice to have, but unfortunately they have a detrimental effect on our NEAT levels.
Yeah, totally. So how has kind of NEAT impacted this kind of obesity crisis that we're in? How's it contributed to that?
So it's probably quite a minor role. I mean, the biggest role in the obesity epidemic is overeating. I mean, I just presented on this in Norway a few weeks ago. You know, the biggest driver has been overeating versus lack of activity, but the lower NEAT has been a contributor, particularly when you look in the earlier part of the century, or I would say like early 1900s, you know, when automobiles first started to be developed and things like that. It certainly has played a role. And then I would also say probably in the past decade with, there's data showing that, it was kind of interesting. You see a kind of a decrease in physical activity levels, you know, from the early 1900s to around 1960, 1970. Then physical activities kind of leveled off, kind of stayed pretty steady through the 1980s and 1990s. And then in the late 90s, early 2000s, suddenly physical activity went down again. And I would say the biggest contributor to that is, you know, the explosion of the personal computer industry, the explosion of desk jobs. You know, computers became a very big part of our lives in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, you know. And so you've seen an additional decrease in activity now. And there's different ways that lower activity can contribute to weight gain and obesity. I mean, the first is the obvious one. You're just expending less energy. And if we think in terms of energy balance, if you expend less energy and you're still eating the same amount of food, then you're going to start to, you know, let's say you were weight stable before, you're going to start to gain weight. And there's even research to show this. If you take people who had physically active jobs and you move them to like a desk job, they will start to gain weight because their calorie intake won't change. They will continue to eat the same amount of food. And so there's evidence on that. And then there's a second additional way that it can be a contributor. There's a lot of good data that shows that physically active people, their brains do a better job of regulating energy intake. And so when you're more physically active, your brain is in more in tune with how much you're actually eating and how much you need to eat, and your satiety and fullness signals and things like that are just more in tune with what you're eating. And so that's another way that physical activity is protective against weight gain. So when you become sedentary, your brain is not as sensitive anymore to variations in your calorie intake, and it becomes easier to overeat. So physical activity and overeating can actually, and NEAT can actually kind of, there's a relationship there. They can kind of play off of each other.
Brilliant. Can NEAT kind of be measured? Because we've got all of these kind of accelerometers or Fitbits or pedometers out there now. What's the kind of most accurate way outside of a ward of measuring activity?
Yeah, I mean, outside of a metabolic ward setting or something like that, I mean, accelerometers like Fitbits, things like that, are going to be your best choice. I mean, for a free living individual, and they're useful tools, or even simple pedometers work well. If you think about it, walking makes up the biggest portion of people's daily NEAT. So anything to get you to walk more is going to make a big contribution to your NEAT levels. And so accelerometers and pedometers, which will track your step counts, are really great ways to track your NEAT levels. And what's, you know, the thing is, most people are way less active than they think they are. And so when you put one of these devices on them, they're shocked. They're like, oh my God, I didn't realize that I was as inactive as I was. And so these devices can really offer you great feedback. I wouldn't, if you're going to use these devices, I would just go by the step counts and activity counts and things like that. Don't use the energy expenditure values to, you know, say, oh, I burn this many calories per day according to my Fitbit.
Yeah,
they're not accurate enough to do that.
No.
But if you just look at the changes and you want to try to get the numbers up, particular step counts, I mean, that's where they're most valuable.
Do you think technology-wise they'll ever get to that point where they're really able to accurately track your energy expenditure?
I don't think so, just because you would have to...
Just how variable it is.
Yeah, there's too much variability. And just when you think of trying to measure energy expenditure, I mean, no device can capture all of your movement. So, for example, if I'm wearing a pedometer on my hip, you know, it's not going to capture my upper body movement. If I'm, you know, wearing an accelerometer on my wrist, there are certain movements that it won't capture. It can also have a lot of errors in assessing, you know, what type of movement is occurring and things like that. You know, beyond wearing like special designed underwear, which has actually been done in some research, beyond wearing special designed underwear that basically tracks all of your body's movements, there's really no way to really do it super accurately in a free living individual. And I just don't see how, in terms of technology, it could ever get to that point, just because of the inherent limitations of measuring movement and energy expenditure in general. So
you mentioned walking. There's been a kind of huge uprise in standing desks. They seem to be a bit of a niche right now. What kind of ways can people kind of get a little bit more NEAT in their life, and what sort of activities and calorie range per hour can these kind of contribute?
Well, the biggest thing is, I would say, again, walking more, because even if you walk at 1 mile per hour, which is a tiptoe, I mean, that's basically usually when you turn the treadmill on, that's the starting speed of a treadmill. And I mean, that's extremely slow. If you walk at 1 mile per hour, you double your energy expenditure over sitting. So if you walk at 2 miles per hour, you increase it even more. And 2 miles per hour is probably the average walking pace of most people. So I would say just walking more, and there's various ways you can do that. You know, parking further away from destinations, taking stairs rather than escalator or a lift or elevator. You can, you know, if you have a desk job, something that I used to do when I had a corporate desk job for a long period of time. And one thing that I did was I made sure I got up once an hour for about 5 minutes or so and just walked around my building. And the thing is, if you do that, you know, over 8 hours, you know, I would accumulate 35 to 40 minutes of walking. So just little things like that can add up. You know, it's just important though. You got to do it consistently. You know, someone might think, oh, parking further away, does it really make that much of a difference? No, it doesn't. If you don't do it consistently, no, it doesn't make that much of a difference. But if it's something you incorporate into your daily life all of the time, then it's going to add up over time. And so, you know, you could expend, I mean, just doing little steps like that, you could probably expend an extra 100, 150 calories a day, you know, just making those little changes, you know, in your life. So you could even do things like, hey, if you like to watch TV, you know, set up a treadmill in front of your TV and just walk while you watch it, you know? I mean,
one of them little cycle things that you can put at the foot of your chair.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They don't look sexy, but, you know,
yeah,
it's something. So I'm just wondering if people just get a kind of increased NEAT, could they compensate by overeating? Because obviously it's easier to eat 500 calories than it is to expend. Is this kind of something that you've seen, that people sometimes just are more prone to overeat to kind of compensate for the additional activity that they've done or expenditure?
For the most part, I would say no. I would say most people, because NEAT is so low intensity in terms of activity, it's not going to really have any type of hunger stimulus to it. I mean, even just with regular exercise, if you look at on average, I mean, most people on average, exercise does not increase people's calorie intake. So if exercise doesn't do it, NEAT, I mean, there is going to be some individual variation, and some people, we know in terms of exercise, there's a subset of people who might be classified as what we'd call hedonic eaters, people who really are very sensitive to food reward and eat a lot for pleasure and things like that. They may have a tendency to compensate, at least in terms of exercise. Whether they do it in terms of need or not, I can't say. But I would say that's probably a very small portion. I'd say the vast majority of people will get a benefit out of increasing their NEAT levels. And I don't see I'd say most people, you're not going to get much of a compensatory response, if any.
Awesome. So what sort of things can contribute to a decrease in NEAT?
Well, we do know that simple weight loss will cause a decrease in NEAT. And that's your body's way of trying to defend against weight loss. Our bodies like to try to conserve energy. Our bodies don't like to lose weight. And so one way that your body fights is through decreasing your NEAT levels. And you're a lot of times you aren't even aware of it. You might fidget less, move around less. You may be sitting around more and not even realizing it. And that's your body's way of trying to compensate for the loss of activity, or I'd say the loss of weight. And so that's why it's so important for people who are trying to lose body fat that's why I think devices like pedometers and accelerometers are so important, because you can use that as feedback to make sure that you don't end up decreasing your activity levels in response to weight loss.
So from the sounds of it, you use these with your clients quite a lot.
Yes. I actually have them wear it outside of their exercise sessions. So I actually ask them not to wear it during their exercise sessions, because I know they're doing the exercise. They don't need the accelerometer for that. What I want to know is how active are they during the other 15 hours out of the day that they're awake? That's what matters, because you could have a great exercise session. You could have this great exercise session, but if you sit around the rest of the day, you end up just canceling out the benefits of that exercise session. And there's even research shows that some people have been found to actually compensate so much that they end up decreasing their overall energy expenditure, even though they're exercising, because they, you know, whether it's psychological, maybe they think, oh, I did my exercise for today, I can just sit around and relax now. Or whether it's just their body's way of saying, hey, you know, you've been expending too much energy, we're going to force you to conserve it. Whatever the mechanism is, there's some people where that happens too. And so, again, that's why it's so important to have that accelerometer feedback to make sure that's not happening.
I think the important thing with these as well is for people to realize they're not 100% accurate. For example, I was burping my child before, just doing round circular motions on his back with the Fitbit hand, and I hit my 15,000 steps. So, you know, they're not 100% accurate, but at least they're going to be a little somewhat consistent, because, you know, I've seen people almost live their life through their accelerometers, as they do on, say, MyFitnessPal as well.
Yeah,
which is a little bit scary. But let's move on to the next question. So we mentioned earlier it's a downregulation in NEAT, which is kind of really stalling people's progress over the kind of their fat loss goals. Many contribute this to a slowing in metabolism. Is there any truth to that?
So it is true that metabolism will slow down with weight loss, but it's not enough to stop your weight loss. So, I mean, the slowdown that occurs maybe might account for about 100 calories per day. That's not enough to be the reason why someone's not losing. The big reason is because people's NEAT levels go down, and some of the data shows that people's NEAT levels will decrease by 300-400 calories a day or more. And that's why it's happening. It's got nothing to do with people's metabolisms. So
these people, and we'll go back, and I mentioned it at the kind of the start of the podcast, fast metabolisms, do these exist?
Yeah, not real. I mean, most people have normal metabolisms, and these people who seem to stay skinny all the time, despite, you know, eating a lot, things like that, they do not have fast metabolisms. It's been tested in research. It's even been tested anecdotally on myself. I've always been accused of having a fast metabolism, but actually I have a slightly slow metabolism when I was tested. So it's not metabolism. It's because, you know, earlier in the podcast, we talked about genetic NEAT levels, and the bottom line is these people who seem to stay skinny without even trying, they have genetically high NEAT levels. They are just very physically active, a lot of times without even being conscious of it. So that's where it's coming from, but it's not an inherently fast metabolism. Like I said, I've always been a pretty slim guy. You know, when I was in high school, my dad said I was so skinny that I would disappear if I turned to the side. But I've had my metabolic rate tested, and in fact, it's 10% below predicted, which means it's slow. So I do not have a fast metabolism. So it's got nothing to do with metabolism. It's the fact that I'm kind of a fidgeter and I don't like to sit still. And I mean, even here talking on the podcast with you, my legs are doing the little up and down thing while I talk to you. So that's pretty much what it is. It's just some people just genetically have high NEAT levels.
You mentioned in your webinar last night that resistance training may increase NEAT. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so there's been a few studies. There's not a lot of data on this, so that's why I say may. But there's been a few studies that showed that resistance training actually increased people's NEAT levels. There was one study that was done on elderly people. That's not surprising because, you know, if you get an elderly person stronger, they're going to want to move around. They'll be more willing to move around more during the day. So that's not surprising. But it's been even shown in younger, healthy people. There was one study that compared resistance training to aerobic exercise. And what was interesting is that On the non-exercise days, the people that did resistance training, their NEAT levels went up, but the people that did aerobic training, their NEAT levels went down. So I would like to see that study replicated before I, you know, before we start drawing any conclusions from it. But there is a growing body of data that would indicate that resistance training may increase people's NEAT levels. You know, what the mechanism is, I don't know. Like I said, I can hypothesize what it would be in elderly people, but I don't know what the mechanism would be in younger people. But there seems to be at least a growing body of data to suggest that.
Cool. Unlike yourself, I do wear my Fitbit in the gym when I am training. And I've, even before I got this Fitbit, I was very habitually like walking around between sets. And this is something that I try and get my clients to do. And funnily enough, I own a gym. So when there was three or four and it looked like a game of Pac-Man with them all kind of going in and out of the machines. But within an hour's session, I can pick up 2,000-3,000 steps, you know. So these are just ways that I find that we can incorporate kind of NEAT into our lifestyles. Do you have any other bits of advice where people can start incorporating some form of NEAT? We mentioned, you know, standing desks, treadmills. Are there anything else? Get a dog, maybe.
Yeah, get a dog, walk it. You know, there's really, it's just being it's just being mindful of your activity. You know,
in which these Fitbits really are kind of a great tool for that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I said, you'll get the most bang for your buck just by trying to walk around more. But even things like doing, you know, if you're going to wash your car, wash it by hand rather than going through the car wash. I mean, just, you know, things like that, you know, they can all add up over time. So
you mentioned obviously dieting, that's going to contribute to like a decrease in NEAT. Changing of your job's going to lead to a decrease. Your dog dying is going to lead to a decrease. Yeah. What else can kind of lead to a decrease in NEAT? Would age be a contributing factor?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We know that people just become less active when they get older. There's lots of good data that shows that this NEAT levels go down with age. And so that's why it's so important to actually stay physically active as you get older. I mean, you know, people like to blame weight gain with age on slowing metabolism. And again, it's, yes, your metabolism does slow with age, but not nearly to the degree that that where it makes that big of an impact on your weight. I mean, the biggest driver is just people just become less active with age. So, so focusing on activity as people age is also really important.
I like the example you gave in your webinar of like your toddlers basically from getting from point A to B, they went diagonally and all over the shop. Whereas if a grown adult was to do that, in the business world or something, they would be getting some funny looks.
I know, and that, not only that, but my toddlers run everywhere they want to go, you know, and adults don't do that. So
maybe you and I should start doing that and just seeing how it goes. Yeah,
I know.
Right, let's have a little look. So yeah, another thing that you mentioned just earlier, obviously people can kind of compensate through doing too strenuous of an activity session in the gym. So like obviously a message to personal trainers is it might look good towards the clients if you're in there destroying them, but if it leads them to not being able to walk for 2 or 3 days, then that's going to significantly have an impact on their energy expenditure through NEAT. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. So that's the thing is like if you're a trainer and you've got a fat loss client, and I'm talking fat loss clients, I'm not talking performance or anything like that where sometimes you got to train yourself and push yourself. I'm talking purely from a fat loss perspective. If I'm a trainer and I'm just killing my client and I'm just making them exhausted, yeah, they may feel like they had just this amazing workout and I was like, oh, I'm so tired now. But if they're so exhausted that they're sitting around the rest of the day, you're actually doing them a disservice, because you do not want them sitting around the rest of the day. You don't want your clients, if you want your clients to lose body fat, you do not want them so exhausted that they are sitting around the rest of the day. Cause now they're just going to cancel out you're just canceling out the benefit of the exercise session. So yeah, I mean, we want to give our clients good workouts, things like that, but we want to be mindful of just how hard you're working them. And remember, it's about total daily energy expenditure and not just the energy you expend in the exercise session.
Cool. You yourself, you've competed, isn't that right, James?
Yeah, I competed once in a men's physique show, just one time, yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a good experience to do. I mean, I don't know if I'll do it again. Not because of the fat loss, it's more just, I don't know,
the impact on your life.
Yeah, just, especially all the tanning, and especially when you get really close to the show and just all the tanning and all the other crap that goes along with it, you know, it's like, and there's just no reason for me to do it. I mean, it was a good experience for me. I think I would only do it again if I felt like I could step on stage with significantly more muscle than I did before. And I've added a few pounds of muscle since my last contest, but I mean, I've been leaning out this past, you know, 4 or 5 months I'm estimating I've probably only gained maybe a couple pounds in the past 2 years. You know, I mean, I'm 43, so it's just getting harder and harder to put on size. So I'm not sure I'll compete again just for those reasons. It's not really, I did it once for the experience and not sure I'll do it again. So.
Yeah. The reason I asked about obviously competing is because throughout your dieting period, I'm sure you would have maybe used refeeds or dieting breaks, which people tout is going to crank up their metabolism, but is it what's actually happening is cranking up their kind of ability to their calorie output through NEAT and training intensity?
Oh yeah, it does. It's not going to have that much of an effect on metabolism, especially, I mean, a lot of people when they do diet breaks, I mean, they might do it for, you know, a lot of people do a refeed on a weekend or something. That's not a long enough period of time.
No.
To make a difference in metabolism anyway. I just think it has more to do with what you just said and also just the psychological impact of just having a diet break.
Definitely. Especially when we're getting towards them latter stages of the diet. So, I mean, from a kind of public, a Joe Public point of view, do you think, because they seem to feel that diet should be kind of linear, would you recommend kind of like diet or maintenance periods? Because at the end of the day, maintenance is the ultimate goal at the end of a diet for the public, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I think maintenance periods are pretty good. I mean, really, a lot of times you just end up with maintenance periods anyway with general public. I mean, yeah. Especially summertime, you have clients going on vacations and stuff. Usually, like when my clients going on vacation, I basically try to treat it like it's just going to be a maintenance period for them. You know, I tell them, I always tell them, if you can improve, that's fine. But I'm not looking for you to improve on this vacation. I just want you to maintain where you're at right now. And then we'll hit it hard when you get back, you know. So I would say that, I think they can be helpful for general population, but I think it kind of automatically happens anyway, because we, you know, if you're not a hardcore, you know, physique athlete, you're not, you know, the general population just doesn't have the focus and intensity that let's say a physique athlete or competitor has. And so they're going to just naturally have times in their lives when they're going to end up being in a maintenance phase for a week or two anyway, you know. But I still think it can. I do still think it can have benefits, across the board.
Awesome. Well, we're going to start wrapping this up, James, because It's coming to that time, really. I don't know where I was going with that. So just to kind of summarize, people really don't have a fast or slow metabolism. They are just neat or not.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, some people just have genetically high NEAT levels and others don't. I mean, I'm not saying fast and slow metabolisms don't exist, but they are not predictive of people's tendencies to gain weight. They don't really matter.
They
So,
just seem a bit more like a kind of excuse, not to sound
yeah.
harsh,
Yeah.
where realistically they're just doing sweet FA and they're eating too much.
Yeah.
So, you would recommend getting an accelerometer and or a Fitbit and maybe a dog
Yes.
and have a couple of kids.
Yes, definitely.
How many, I'm interested, the audience might be. How many steps do you average? Do you have a Fitbit or an accelerometer?
I haven't been wearing mine for a while, so I don't know. It's the thing is about, don't know. Kids can be a double-edged sword. They could increase your NEAT levels, but they can also decrease your NEAT levels because you're so exhausted by the end of the day that you just want
Yeah, I can
to
imagine it. Mine's still
sit
just eating and sleeping and doing other things at the
around.
moment, so I'm looking forward to that. Where can people find you, James?
Yeah, so you go to my website, weightology.net, and you can. I've got a lot of free content on there, free articles on stuff. You had mentioned my articles on insulin. I've got, a lot of different stuff on there. I've got a research review that people can subscribe to, where I basically go over the latest research in terms of fat loss and muscle gain, things like that. And then all my accounts that people can, my social media accounts are on there that people can follow me. I'm on Facebook and Twitter and also Instagram, so people can find those ways to follow me as well.
Excellent, James. I've had a really, really good time today. I'm new to this podcast game and I'm getting a bit more confident, so I feel like that went rather well, I'm gonna say.
Yeah,
Right.
thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. And I will hopefully be getting James back on the show so we can talk about insulin. So one last time, James, a huge thank you and I'll speak to you soon.
Sounds good. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.